holography is its interpretation in terms of the renormalization group, where the radial coordinate, the radial holographic coordinate, is related to some sort of geometrization of the renormalization scale. And what I'm going to do here is tell you a story about a study of, well, in the beginning, free field theories, or more precisely, we're going to study the free fixed point of a field theory, and I'll show you various examples as we go along. You okay? And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at the exact Wilson-Polchinski renormalization group. Okay. Well, this is a free field theory, and of course, you wouldn't expect that this is a theory that has a holographic dual in the usual sense, right? Because we're taught to think about holographic theories as strongly coupled, large N, that sort of thing. Okay, the more precise statement is that it doesn't have a purely gravitational holographic dual. Okay, but what I'm going to show you is, in fact, that there is a very precise implementation of holography mathematically. And everything that I'm going to do today is going to be exact. Okay, the exact RG equations are called exact because they are exact. And in particular, what we're going to do is we're going to formulate those equations for both the sources and VEVs of certain operators in a given field theory. And I'll show you that they give rise to Hamilton-Jacobi dynamics. Okay, in particular, we're going to get a phase space implementation of a holographic theory. Okay, so because we're in phase space, the equations of motion will be first order equations of motion. And that's a little bit unusual, again, from the point of view of holography. We usually think about having fields in the bulk that satisfy second order, at least generically, second order differential equations. Okay, so there's a nice geometric structure for this formulation that emerges. In the bulk, I'm going to interpret the theory as a higher spin gauge theory, but in particular, I'm going to have a complete geometric interpretation for the theory. Okay, I'm not going to just say I have a connection, I'm going to tell you what the gauge group of the connection is, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, and this, as you'll see, if you're familiar with the Vasiliev of higher spin theories, you'll recognize some similarities, but I think they're, well, whether these are exactly the same as Vasiliev theories is somewhat of an open question. Okay, so let me tell you what the punchlines are. As I said, we're going to study free field theories, but in particular, I'm going to perturb them. I'm going to perturb the action of those theories by arbitrary bilocal or single trace operators. Okay, and this is, if you think in terms of a 2 plus 1 dimensional theory that would normally have a 4 dimensional holographic dual, this is the same playground of the Klebanov-Polyakov proposal, which is a conjectured duality between vector-like field theories and a higher spin gauge gravity theory. Okay, and so normally there are lots of complaints about why do you just look at these particular operators? And the answer is that from the point of view of the infinite set of exact renormalization group equations, this is a consistent truncation. Okay, so it's a closed system. Yeah. Well, it'll be towards the end of the talk. I mean, it's.
Because usually there's a principle behind truncation. So you remember this principle is usually locality.
It's not locality. That's right.
There's something else.
Yeah. Well, it's as I said. I mean, the exact RG equations form a closed set of equations under this circumstances. In some sense, it's an infinite set of equations, but I'll package them as a multi-local single equation. Okay. So what we're going to find is, as I said before, a formulation in which the sources for these operators are interpreted as a connection on a bundle, eventually from the bulk point of view, And this bundle is very big, and it turns out that it seems to have a name, which is an infinite jet bundle. Okay, and I'll explain to you in simple terms what that is and why it emerges in this context, why it's natural. Okay, and I think the most important thing about this story is that, you know, if we have a connection, you should really understand what bundle we're talking about, what the structure group of the bundle is. And as I'll show you, it turns out to be possible to understand that, the answer to that question, directly from the field theory. Okay, it's just, it amounts to a set of field redefinitions in the free field path integral. Okay, and because the free fields are just integration variables in the path integral, there's a set of worded entities that emerge because we're talking about a change of variables. And in fact, those worded entities are equivalent to the renormalization group equations. Okay, so you can, we'll understand what that set of transformations is. And it's unusual from the point of view of local quantum field theory. We don't usually think about the transformations that I'm going to talk about. Okay, well, this jet bundle story exists on the field theory itself, but we're going to formulate this, we're going to formulate the Wilson-Polchinski equations in such a way that the renormalization scale literally becomes one extra dimension. Okay, but again, I want to emphasize that I'm using connection language here. So I'm not thinking about a spacetime such as ADS as a metric space. Okay, instead, I'm encoding the geometry in a connection. Okay, so technically we're talking, for example, about Cartan connections. Okay, and what's going to happen is that ADS in particular, it's not something that I'm putting in, but in fact it'll emerge as a geometry that corresponds to the relativistic free fixed point. Okay, so more punchlines. Okay, so as I told you, we're going to get a phase space formalism. Okay, the phase space here is not the usual temporal phase space. It's a phase space corresponding to a radial quantization, if you like. Okay, and as I also said earlier, the equations of motion that we'll derive are equivalent to the equations of motion of a higher spin gauge theory. Okay, so again, if you're familiar with the literature on higher spin gauge theories, you know that what has been formulated is a set of equations of motion for the gauge fields, for the higher spin gauge fields, but there's not really any notion of an action. Okay, and this formulation is going to naturally lead to an action. And it's in fact a very useful action formulation because I'll be able to turn the usual crank of holography. I'll be able to solve the equations of motion in the bulk. At least I'll be able to find certain solutions of the equations of motion in the bulk, evaluate the on-shell action, and hence derive all of the correlation functions of the theory. And so that'll be towards the end of the talk, but I'll show you that this gives precisely the right answer. Okay, so not only is the answer not ridiculous, but it computes everything correctly, and it gives you a nice holographic viewpoint on what's going on. Okay, and towards the end of the talk, one of the things that I'm going to do a little bit of a survey of other higher spin dual theories, but I already mentioned that the notion of ADS is associated with a particular connection on this bundle in the bulk, and there can be other examples. So I can run this logic for any free fixed point. So for example, I'll look at the z equals 2, the dynamical exponent, z equals 2 non-relativistic free theory. And that also turns out to have a higher spin dual, okay, where the background geometry now, of course, is not ADS. It's the space-time that has the isometries corresponding to the symmetries of this non-relativistic fixed point. In other words, it's the Schrodinger space-time. As far as I know, this is a new construction. Okay, so let me begin by reminding you of the exact renormalization group. Yep.
Do we talk about non-free safeties, or is it only?
I will make remarks about interactions towards field theory interactions towards the end of the talk. But it's, as I'll say in a minute, it's important to go through this first of all, because in some sense, what I'm discussing here corresponds to the unbroken phase of a gauge theory. Okay, and as soon as, part of the lore of higher spin theory is that as soon as you turn on interactions in the field theory, the higher spin symmetry gets Higgsed, unless you're in a very special case like n equals infinity in some theories, right? So if I just immediately turn on interactions, then I'm going to lose the geometry because I'm going to see a theory in the Higgs phase. Okay, so it's better to begin with the free field theories. Okay, so Polchinski introduced this in 1984. The formulation is that you regulate the theory by introducing a cutoff function in the kinetic term. Okay, and it's particularly well suited for theories that are at a free fixed point or close to a free fixed point, because it's easy to formulate this in terms of a path integral over elementary fields. Okay, and what Polchinski showed is that you can extract an exact equation which just expresses the fact that the partition function should be independent of the cutoff. Okay, and the way that this goes is that you manipulate the path integral and you find a term and you discard it, which is a total derivative in the path integral. Okay, and what's left is this exact equation. Okay, really for the interaction Lagrangian, but if I think about the interaction Lagrangian as a sum of terms, then it gives me the renormalization group equations for all of the couplings. Okay, so in other words, in order that the partition function be invariant or be not depend on the cutoff, the couplings or the coefficients of the operators have to depend on the scale in a prescribed way that's described by the RG equations. Okay, so here's pictorially. What we're doing, we're considering some theory with a kinetic term S naught and some sort of interaction in general S int. And we introduce a cutoff function, as I said, into the kinetic term. So here it is in the scalar case. And this it should be case of F. This function is essentially one at low energy scales, but it falls to zero above some cutoff scale. And that cutoff I'm calling M. Okay, and the Polchinski procedure, I won't go into detail on this, but the Polchinski procedure gives you an equation which looks like that. It depends on the cutoff explicitly through a derivative of this cutoff function. And you can see that the derivative of the cutoff function is essentially zero everywhere except near the cutoff. Okay, and you can apply similar methods to correlation functions and derive exact Kalin-Zamanzik equations, et cetera. Pardon me? I have some ideas about how to do it for gauge theories, but let's talk about that towards the end. It's hard. I think it's hard. Right. Yeah.
But people have tried. I mean, maybe John was asking background.
Well, you can do exact RG. Okay, so maybe I misinterpreted. You can certainly do this procedure for gauge theories. Getting a higher spin dual in that case is. Yes. Yeah. Ask me that question in a minute. Again. Okay. So it turns out that if you want to understand the geometry here, the best thing to do is to look at, rather than the scalar theory, which you might think is the simplest, you should look at a fermionic theory. And the reason is that, you know, the kinetic term is, it just involves a single derivative, okay? And as we'll see in a moment, there's a covariant derivative, if you like, that will emerge, okay? And it's easy to see that structure if you just have a single derivative. Okay, so I'm using the same sort of notation that we had in the previous transparency, I have a cutoff function here, which I'm still calling case of f, and now it's just a single derivative. And for simplicity, I'm taking, I'm in 2 plus 1, and I'm considering Majorana fermions. Okay, to organize the theory, it's very important to write this in sort of a matrix notation, where I think of space-time points x and y as like matrix indices. That's a familiar concept, but I'm really going to push that notation. So in particular, I'm going to, instead of writing this as a derivative acting on a field, I'm going to introduce a matrix, which I think of as a derivative operator acting on a delta function, and then this kinetic term can be written as just a matrix product, and I'm going to use this center dot notation to represent, you know, tracing over indices. Okay, so you'll see lots of expressions like that, and you can uncompact them if need be. Okay, so in 2 plus 1, so I'm going to consider single trace operators. I'm in a free field theory, so I have some number of Majorana fermion fields, labeled by an index m, which runs from 1 to n. And in 2 plus 1, a complete basis of single trace operators or singlet operators is just given by psi psi and psi gamma mu psi. Okay, and as I said, I'm going to introduce sources for those operators, and I'm going to allow these to be bilocal. Okay, so I'll call the source for this guy A, and the source for this, it has an index mu, I'll call that W mu. And if you like, this is a packaging of an infinite number of local operators. You can think of a sort of quasi-local expansion of these bilocal sources, in particular, in a momentum expansion. Okay? Or more precisely, this isn't really quite kosher. At the fixed point, there's a conformal symmetry, and in fact, you can organize it better in terms of conformal modules of that conformal symmetry. But we're gonna use the bilocal notation throughout, and so that will be implied everywhere. Okay, so I've got those sources A and W. I'm going to define the partition function. I'm going to think of it as a functional of those sources. Okay, the action is what I wrote on the previous transparency. M is the cutoff, okay, that comes into that cutoff function. And G0 is the field theory metric. Okay, so in this talk, I'm just going to talk about field theories on Minkowski space. Okay, so you should think of G0 as just eta. Okay, and so far, the interactions that I have are all quadratic in the fields. This is a Gaussian integral, so of course you can do it, right? It's a determinant. Okay, so there's no doubt about what the partition function of this theory is. Okay, but I'm going to construct a huge structure to understand what that determinant is really telling you. Okay, and I'm going to use the notation pi and pi mu for the VEVs of the operators psi psi and psi gamma mu psi. Okay, and once I have the partition function, I can think of those just in terms of derivatives. Okay, so one of the nice things about this particular model is that it's exactly one of the models that Klebanov and Polyakov conjectured was dual to Vasiliev's higher spin theory on ADS4. Okay, in particular, these models are called B-type Vasiliev higher spin theories. Okay, and well, because we're considering the same theory, it's sort of obvious that the sources that we have, A and W mu, are in one-to-one correspondence with the fields in that theory. And what we're going to arrive at, as I said, is an implementation of a higher spin gauge theory, but it won't look precisely like Vasiliev's construction. And I think the right interpretation of Vasiliev is that it's a specific representation of some more general geometric structure that we'll see. Okay, so here's probably the central point to the talk. Okay, so we have this action, okay, with the sources A and W mu, and what I'm going to ask you to do is to consider just a linear transformation of the fields. Okay, I'm going to take it to commute with the ON that acts on the M indices, but I'm going to allow it to be an arbitrary bilocal transformation of the fields. Okay, so we don't usually like to do non-local transformations, but in a free field theory, this is easy to do. The measure of the path integral transforms in a very simple way under a linear transformation, right? At most, there's a determinant, a formal determinant that arises. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at, well, what this does to the action, okay? And in fact, it's a very interesting effect. It has a very interesting effect on the action. And again, I want to emphasize that we're transforming here the integration variable. Right, we're not talking, psi are not operators, they're just integration variables. Okay, so I'm doing a change of variables under the path integral, and this has to be trivial. Okay, so what this is like the Fujikawa method that you use when you study anomalies. It's the same sort of logic. Okay, in general, what's going to happen, as I'll show you, is that when you do this change of variables, the theory goes back to itself, except that the backgrounds you can think of it as the backgrounds transforming. Okay, so this will implement a background symmetry. Okay. Yes. I'm going to tell you what the constraint is in a second, or what constraint I want to place on it. Okay, so apply this transformation to the action. Psi just transforms. And if I add and subtract a term here, I can write this as a term that looks like the original kinetic term without the source fields, except that it has an L transpose L here. Okay, and what's left is of this form. Okay, so if I require L to be orthogonal, functionally orthogonal, in other words, L transpose L, which is just this integration, if I require L to be orthogonal, this is the only condition that I'm going to place on it, then that kinetic term is invariant. Okay, so this just goes back to what we started with. Okay, but you can see here that the sources, A and omega, have transformed. And they transform in a very interesting way. A just gets conjugated by L. And W mu transforms in a nonlinear way, which reminds you of the transformation of a connection, except the only somewhat unusual part is that what's playing the role of the derivative is this regulated derivative. Okay, so we conclude from that little calculation then that the interpretation of W mu is that it's a connection with respect to this symmetry, this orthogonal symmetry. And I'm going to call that symmetry OL2, okay, because L2 refers to the function space on RD, and you can define an orthogonal group as I just did for any vector space. Okay, so W mu is a connection for that symmetry, and A is some sort of tensor. Okay, so as I've been emphasizing, this has a trivial effect. All we've done is we've changed variables in the path integral, and consequently, there's an exact word identity that you can write down, and that is that the partition function evaluated at W and A has to be equal to the partition function evaluated at the gauge transformed W and A. Okay, so this is the usual notion of a background symmetry. And if you like, you can construct an infinitesimal version of this where I take an infinitesimal bilocal function there, and then the transformations of W and A look familiar. Okay, so there's a covariant derivative, if you like, then. As I said, the thing that's playing the role of a derivative here is this PF, the regulated derivative. So the thing that's playing the role of a covariant derivative is PF plus W, and I'll call that D or D sub F on some pages. Okay, so again, the way that you should think about this is that this OL2 symmetry leaves invariant the regulated free fixed point. Okay, the fixed point corresponds to turning off the sources. Okay, so if I take my theory to just be the fixed point theory, this OL2 does nothing to that. Okay, if I turn on the backgrounds, then they transform, as we said. Okay, more precisely, the way that I'm thinking here about the free fixed point is actually in a particular gauge where I have a zero connection, but in fact any flat connection would do. And I'll call that, I'll make use of that to define a flat connection W0. And eventually that W0 I'm going to interpret once I show you how to construct the RG equations and I move into the bulk, W0 will extend to a connection that is equivalent to ADS space in this case. Okay, so I'm going to make use of that to write the full connection as a flat piece plus a tensorial piece, a contortion if you like. Okay, and so both A and W hat now source operators with respect to the free fixed point, and they both transform tensorially or linearly if you like under this OL2. Okay, well you can extend this. We need to extend this because I want to talk about our G, and there's sort of a conformal version of this where instead of requiring that L transpose L be 1, I allow it to be 1 up to a rescaling. And in this talk, I'm going to take the case where this lambda is just a constant throughout spacetime, but you can relax that. You can imagine that it varies over spacetime. Okay, and this also forms a group, and I'm going to call that COL2, C for conformal. Okay, and it turns out, so I'm just including scale transformations in addition, if you like, and it turns out that that's a symmetry, a background symmetry of this theory, as long as we simultaneously transform the field theory metric, as well as the cutoff and the sources. And the transformation of the sources looks the same for COL2 as it did for OL2. Okay, and to account for this transformation of the metric, I don't really want to do this, right? I want to think of the field theory as being on Minkowski space with metric eta. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce a scale z. I'm just going to write g0 generally as 1 over z squared eta, and I'm going to describe this rescaling of the metric as a rescaling of z. Okay, so z, in fact, as we'll see, will become the renormalization scale of in the RG equations. So that's an additional ingredient that you don't normally think of in the Polchinski formalism. He usually just describes things in terms of a cutoff. Okay, so here's how you should construct the exact renormalization group equations. Okay, the first, I would describe this in two steps. The first step is the Polchinski step, where you lower the cutoff from m to lambda m. Okay, in other words, you're integrating out a shell in momentum space, if you like. Okay, or your block spinning, or whatever, however you want to say that. Okay, and so as we said, what that does is it relates the partition function at one value of the cutoff to the partition function at another value of the cutoff. But in order that the partition function not actually depend on the cutoff, you have to transform the sources. Okay. Okay, step two. Okay, so Polchinski just takes this equation and writes the RG equation in terms that, you know, he expresses it as changing the cutoff. Okay, I don't want to think that way because I'm trying to construct a holographic theory. So what I would like to have is a fixed cutoff and a renormalization scale, right? So I want to think about RG as a change of the renormalization scale, and that, as you expect, will become the radial coordinate. Okay, so I need to do a second step, which is to take this cutoff back to the cutoff that I started with. And if you remember, this COL2 acted on the cutoff. Okay, so I can think of this step two as a COL2 transformation in general. Okay, but I can do I don't have to just do a simple transformation. I can also simultaneously do a transformation of the fields, and consequently the sources will transform in the familiar way. Okay, so we get a relationship then between the partition function with A and W at the scale, at the cutoff M, to the partition function again at the cutoff M with transformed sources and a different renormalization scale. Okay, so if you like, we can expand this for small lambda, sorry, for lambda close to one. Let me not show you pictures. Okay, so we can expand this for small lambda. In step two, I said that, you know, step two was a COL2 transformation. Okay, and an infinitesimal transformation, I'm going to choose to write in this way. Okay, so it's the zeroth order is just a delta function. It's a trivial transformation. I have some small parameter epsilon, and I'm going to write the generator as WZ. And it turns out, I mean, I chose this notation for a specific reason, and that is, as you'll see in a moment, that WZ will in fact become the D plus one form component of the connection W mu. Okay, so this is precisely formulated such that this comes together with W mu to form a differential form in the bulk. And we'll see that as we go along. Okay, so if you look at these RG equations, I'm not going to show you the details, but what you find when you do step one and step two are equations on the sources that look like this in the infinitesimal case. And the output of the Polchinski procedure is to give you beta functions. Okay, some functions of the sources that appear here. Okay, and in the theory that I'm studying, I know exactly what these are. They turn out to be quadratic in A and W hat. Okay, and well, okay, so you can think about the W zero. This flat connection is also transforming covariantly in the bulk. And so the way to think about what's going on here is that what the RG is telling you is how to extend the sources that we had in the space-time theory to from one plane to the next. Okay, from one copy of space-time to the next that are distinguished by different values of z. And the structure of the equations suggest how you should think about those sources extending to tensors in the bulk. And the answer is very simple. What happens is that A just extends to a scalar quantity in the bulk. It's bilocal, again, in X and Y, but it's a scalar quantity. And W becomes a one form in the bulk. And the RG equations just look like this. Okay, and if I can package these together, if I introduce an exterior derivative that involves this PF, I can write the RG equations in a very familiar form. Okay, it turns out that W0 just remains flat, and the covariant derivative of A is just the beta function, and the curvature of this connection W is another beta function. That's right. So yeah, I'll come back to that in a minute. Because I've done something, I've made a leap here because I've in these equations, I just had beta and beta mu, which were the RG functions. Okay, what I've done here is I'm thinking of this equation as the Z component of this equation. Okay, so the Z, so this is actually a one form now. I'm going to tell you. Okay. So this is a one form. The Z component of it is the RG beta function. And the other components are determined by consistency, by a Bianchi identity. Yes? Yes, absolutely. It can have torsion. Yeah, I'm not assuming anything. Right? These are the equations I have. I'm not assuming anything. Okay. I'll show you, it's on the next trans, it's two transparencies down, but anyway, the only point I wanted to make here is that if I go back, so this is general, right? Because I'm at the fixed point, but I'm turning on sources. So that in general, you know, will move me away from the fixed point. For example, I could have a mass term, right? That would drive me away from the fixed point. But what it means to be at the fixed point is that these beta functions vanish, okay? So so it just says that A is covariantly constant and the full connection is flat if you're at the fixed point. If you're elsewhere, then it's no longer true. Okay, so similarly, you can construct Kalin-Zamanzik equations just turning the same cranks. What happens is that the quantities, remember these were the one-point functions of psi psi and psi gamma mu psi, it turns out that those things extend to bulk fields that I'll call P and P mu. Okay, and what happens is that the full set of RG equations, the beta function equations that I showed you and the Kalin-Zamanzik equations for these pis, have a structure such that you can think about this as a phase space formulation where A and P and W and PA are canonically conjugate. Okay, and this is from the point of view of the bulk in radial quantization, where this z coordinate's playing the role of time. Okay, so this is just a summary. I won't go through the details for lack of time, but the equations that you're asking for are just these Bianchi identities. Okay, so these are full form equations, and in principle, you can solve these if I have a solution of the equations, I can solve these for the other components of beta that aren't determined by the RG procedure. Okay, well, that's too much detail at first pass. Okay, so where does this phase space structure come from? Well, if I think about the partition function as e to the I s, okay, where s is going to be the Hamilton-Jacobi generator, in Hamilton-Jacobi theory, there's a fundamental relation, which is that the time derivative of S is minus the Hamiltonian, right? Usually you describe this as solving the system by doing a canonical transformation that gets you to a trivial system with zero Hamiltonian, okay? And this is the resulting equation that has to be true, okay? So since I know what the partition function is now, I can read off what this Hamiltonian is, okay? Essentially, this is just, this I interpret as the RG equations. Okay, and well, okay, so in this theory, it turns out the Hamiltonian looks like that. Don't dwell too much on the details of this. I'll present it in a slightly better way in a few moments. But one of the things I want to point out is that this is a strange Hamiltonian in that it's linear in momenta. It's linear in the p's that are conjugate to the sources. Okay, and this is not something I put into the theory. It's just what comes out from the RG equations. Okay, and this is a property of a free theory. Okay, this generically won't survive when we turn on interactions. Okay, and this Hamilton-Jacobi action, you can think of as an action for this higher spin theory, but it's an action that's written now in terms of the phase space variables. Okay, there isn't a Lagrangian formulation for this theory precisely because the Hamiltonian is linear in momenta, so I can't do the Legendre transform in a useful way. But nevertheless, as I'll show you, it's useful to have this action in on phase space. As it really is the, it does play the role of the action in the bulk, and it will, when I take it on shell, it will give me the correlation functions. Your question?
No, I was just making a comment about the Poisson
system. Okay, okay, okay. Okay, so if you like, this, the existence of this Hamiltonian, okay, when I say there's a Hamiltonian, I mean there's this, the Hamilton equations are precisely the RG equations, okay? So the existence of this, there's sort of an integrability condition that, you know, all of the RG equations are consistent with the, are precisely the Hamilton equations, okay? But to get this structure, you can't just think about the beta function equations. You can't just focus on the sources. You have to think about the VEVs as well, and what equations they satisfy, because those are half the variables. Okay, so as I said in the introduction, I'm getting a formulation here, which is in d plus one dimensions, but the system is a first order system, right? Because it's a phase space system, rather than involving fields that satisfy second order equations. Okay, it bears a lot of resemblance to Chern-Simons theories. Okay, and indeed you might think that there are special cases where this literally would be a Chern-Simons theory, but remember that I'm in a four-dimensional bulk here. So there is no Chern-Simons theory, but of course you can always, in lieu of a Chern-Simons theory, you can always construct a phase space theory which does have first order equations of motion. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question. You should have said it. So A omega are the source for P. What is the meaning of P? These are the VEVs.
That's right. That was the definition, so it's obvious. Yeah. In holography, this is the way it works, right? Typically you describe this, you know, you have a field in the bulk, say it's a scalar field, it satisfies a second order equation of motion, and a general, if it's a linear equation, a general solution has two integration functions, which we think about as being on the boundary of ADS, say. And those have an interpretation in the dual field theory as the source and VEV for operators. Okay, so it's precisely the same.
You assume you're in four dimensions, but why isn't this more generic?
Yeah, I'll mention that in a second. I'll get back to that in a second. Okay, so I mentioned briefly that this flat connection that I pulled out, W0, has an interpretation in this case as something that encodes the geometry of ADS. Okay, and one way to parameterize W0, or rather a choice of gauge, if you like, is to write the connection in this way. Okay, where, remember, this is a bilocal quantity. Okay, so what I do is I write it as certain forms and multiplied by generators, which themselves are bilocal expressions. But I've given them the names D and P because they really are the dilatation generator and the momentum. Okay, and if you work this through, you'll find that this connection is flat as long as D and P satisfy the commutation relations of the conformal group. Okay, and as I said, what the structure that we have here is not a metric formulation, but you can unpack this to obtain, if you like, a frame and spin connection. And in this particular case, when you do that, it gives rise to a frame and spin connection for ADS. Okay, these forms probably look familiar to you. That means the connection is metric. I don't have a metric, so I'm not sure what you mean by metric compatible. I don't have a metric. Okay. It's just I have a bundle over what I usually call a model spacetime or a topological space, if you like. And instead of supplying that with a metric, I'm supplying a connection which encodes that geometry. Okay. The spin 2 part of this is the, you know, involves the encodes the metric. But because this is bilocal, it also includes higher spin versions of that. Okay.
Yes, yes.
What's the point?
Well, I'm saying you don't have a metric, but there's usually a metric behind it.
Well, what I'm saying is I'm not formulating this as a metric space. Okay. Instead, I'm formulating it just as a bundle over a topological space. And if I choose a flat connection, then that corresponds. I can unpack that into a metric description if I like, but it's unnatural.
But it could be some interesting question to look at the things of two-point functions, like single trace query.
Well, I'm going to show you what those are in a minute. So I'm going to show you what those are in a minute. Okay. So why does this have to correspond to ADS? Well, the reason is that this choice of connection, it turns out, is invariant under a subgroup of COO2. Of course, it's not a general connection is not invariant, right? It transforms as a connection. But there's a subgroup which is, in fact, isomorphic to O2, comma D, which is the conformal group in D dimensions. And W0 is invariant under that. Okay, in metric language, I would say then that this is the isometries of the corresponding metric. Okay, and this is why I get ADS, because remember, W0 is the data that I have in this field theory when I turn off the sources, when I go back to the free fixed point. Okay, and the O2 comma D is the symmetry of that fixed point. Okay, so getting back to a question that was just asked, you can ask, can I apply this to other cases? Okay, it's interesting to go down to fermions in two dimensions because, you know, there's a whole set of dualities between two-dimensional theories and higher spin theories, and that's something that we're working on at the moment. You can also go up in dimension. Okay, in the Vasiliev case, there's only a higher spin model that corresponds to the free fermion in four dimensions, and the reason is that he describes things in terms of connections. And if you're in higher dimensions, the point is that there are new operators, okay, that are just that you have to source in order to have a consistent set of RG equations. And these are objects that are higher order tensors. Okay, so you can study those theories, but they're more complicated. And you might ask, do these things correspond to some sort of connections? So the first one is sourced by an object that is a two-index antisymmetric tensor. You know, so you might ask, well, is this coupled to a string or something like that? And as far as I can tell at this point, it doesn't. This is just it appears to be, at least from the point of view of this OL2 symmetry, it appears just to be a boring two-component tensor. Okay, so that's all I'm going to say about fermions. Of course, there's a complex version of this where you talk about Dirac fermions instead of Majorana fermions, and that gives rise to a symmetry that I'll call UL2 instead of OL2. Okay, and there are bosonic free field theories, of course, as well. So the example that I'll show you here consists of n complex scalar fields. Okay, and if you want to understand the geometry, you should formulate the sources in a similar way that we did for the fermion. Okay, and this is why I remarked that you should start with the fermion to understand the structure, because for the boson, of course, we have two derivatives, and it may not have been obvious that you should write the sources in this particular way. Okay, this can be done in any dimension, and these things are supposed to be dual to the Vasiliev A models, okay, which also exist in all dimensions. Okay, so this is a way to formulate the exact RG equations in a way that has the same sort of geometric structure as we had in the fermionic case. It turns out that the bosonic theory has an extra symmetry, and you can sort of see that here. If you expand this out, you get a term like W mu squared, right, which of course is a scalar, so it's essentially the same as B here. So you get the idea that maybe you can shift the backgrounds around and simplify the situation. I don't know what that was. And in fact, you can state that as a symmetry as a background symmetry of the partition function. It acts in this way, and if you look at it here, you can see that by making use of the symmetry, I can remove W hat from the theory entirely. Okay, so as a result, I'm going to think about this thing, this theory, where W is just a flat connection, W0, and I have a source, a scalar source B, and that in fact sources all of the single trace operators. Okay, so, and that's, yeah, so this is actually what I mentioned this here. There was a paper a few years ago by Mike Douglas and some collaborators where this was actually the starting point that they started with. So that, you know, so these ideas grew out of that paper in a sense. But because they started at this place, they worked very hard to backtrack and understand the geometry, and they never quite got there, at least in a way that I can understand or anybody else can understand. Okay, so you might ask, well, okay, so this is nice. We get higher spin holography. Who cares? You might ask, well, what about ordinary gravitational holography? As I mentioned earlier, the standard lore in higher spin theory is that as soon as you turn on interactions in the field theory, you'll generate anomalous dimensions for all of the higher spin currents, okay? And from the, so they have anomalous dimensions, the corresponding fields in the bulk must be massive then, okay? There's no conservation laws anymore, okay? So the higher spin symmetry is Higgs. Okay, and so you might imagine that if you just follow the theory to strong coupling, at least if you preserve translational invariance in the field theory, that you'll be left behind with a theory that just contains gravity. Okay, so that's an interesting challenge, but it's kind of vague in its implementation. Yeah. Apparently, yes, because there's this lambda parameter, right? So lambda equals 0 and 1 are free fermions and free bosons, so I know how to do those points. That's easy. And yeah, and the question is, in this story, what is that lambda parameter? So that's the sort of thing that we're thinking about. Yeah. Okay, well, okay, so let's talk a little bit about interactions. Okay, so you might think about and I'll come back to this later in the talk, but you know, you might think about situations like in the 2+1 models where you know there's a critical point at large n, right, the Wilson-Fischer fixed point. So you might imagine that you can access those in this using these methods, okay? And indeed, what you would expect to find is that the interpretation of the exact RG equations is that almost all of the gauge fields become massive. Okay, so it's, in fact, it's only in that sense where large N plays a role. In the present discussion, N could be anything, and it really doesn't matter. It's only when you consider interactions that it becomes important. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about the geometric structure here, because we've identified the gauge group, but I didn't talk about what the associated bundle is. Okay, and this is a little bit confusing at first sight because we're used to thinking about gauge symmetries as local transformations, right? As I, you know, example that I indicated here, but here we're talking about transformations that are bilocal. Okay, and I said that I'm sort of thinking about these L x comma y's as having indices x comma y's in the usual way. Okay, and it would be very nice to think about this from the usual bundle point of view if we could really map this to a system where these indices are really indices. Okay, and it turns out that this infinite jet bundle is precisely that sort of structure. So I'm not going to get into details about this, but let me just kind of explain what the thinking is. Okay, so I mentioned earlier that, you know, we're thinking about, well, in this I'll write it for the field psi, but more generally we'll be talking, you know, we talk about sources that are bilocal and we have these quasi-local expansions in terms of, you know, an infinite collection of of local operators that are derivatives. Okay. The general idea is that if I have a field, I so-called prolong that field by writing a vector which includes the field and all of its derivatives. Okay, and the nice thing about this, the nice thing about thinking about that collection of objects is that a differential operator like P mu, okay, if I act on this jet with P mu, you know, what it does is it just takes, it maps you from this guy to this guy, right, this guy to this guy, et cetera. Okay, so it just sort of shifts the vector over. Okay, so you can literally think of P mu then as a matrix acting on this vector. Okay, and so all of the generators of the group can be thought of in this matrix sort of formulation. Okay, so that's why we refer to this as an infinite jet bundle. So this is a concept that appears in several different places in physics, and there's some math work on this. I haven't actually found any useful math reference that talks about connections on jet bundles, but anyway, this is what we're talking about in this context. Okay, so I promised at the beginning that I would show you that this formulation of the theory really has a useful holographic interpretation. I can do all of the usual things that we do in a holographic theory. As I said, we had this Hamilton-Jacobi Hamiltonian, and I can promote that to an action. I'm just writing PQ dot minus H, okay? And when you collect that together, it turns out it's an action of this form, okay? And the P's, as I said, the P's appear linearly in this action. They're just Lagrange multipliers for equations of motion. This is the RG equation, or at least the Z component of it is the RG equation. And this guy just enforces the flatness of the W0 connection. And then there's a piece left over. Laurent, you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question about the previous one. So that is this H connection, which goes back to the notion of locality, which is that in some sense there might be a perfect gauge there, which is the gauge that you can choose your area, not your non-local space. Mm-hmm. Then you can ask, in some sense, when you think about the case, there's a preferred gauge that somehow minimizes the number of derivatives you would have in the, do you have a sense in which, what are the gauge orbits of this kinetic term? Like, I can take a local object and then gauge also and make it non-local. But secretly, when I know it's on the order two, right? So, you see what I'm saying? That there should be a No?
No. Well,
okay.
So
I would say that each gauge orbit maybe represents some notion of locality, second order, third order derivative, and etc.
Okay, so I've got this big non-local symmetry, right? And indeed, I can talk about being in different gauges, right? I can make something that look local look non-local.
Yeah.
And the theory doesn't care, right? And depending on the question you're asking, one choice of gauge might be better than another.
So then, the question is that in this non-local formulation, there might be a way in which you can say some theories are more local than others. In the sense
that
there exists a gauge where they look local, but there may be a gauge in one way.
So one way to say this is if you think about, say, in the scalar theory, this B of x comma y, right? I mentioned that you can think about this as an infinite expansion, a quasi-local expansion, right, where you just expand in powers of momenta. Okay, you can also think about that as a specific choice of gauge. Okay, so what I'm doing there is I'm choosing a gauge in which that quantity is block diagonal. Okay, and what the blocks correspond to are precise, you can make them correspond precisely to modules of the conformal group. Okay, so this is a precise way to see that what I'm really collecting together is an infinite collection of conformal representations, right, with quasi-primaries and all their descendants. Okay, so that's a gauge which is nice if you want to think from that point of view. Okay, there are other situations that I'm not going to describe today where other gauges may be more useful.
Are you writing an action by just putting equations of motion with like that multiplier behind it?
No, what I okay. So what I did is from the RG from the RG equations, I thought of as Hamilton equations. Okay, there's this Hamilton-Jacobi structure. I identified the Hamiltonian. Okay, and the action that I'm writing is nothing but PQ dot minus H. Okay, and it turns out that the P's in this theory, at least, the P's are Lagrange multipliers. So I didn't put that in. It's just what you get. Okay, and I'm going to show you that this is very useful. Okay, so what I would like to do with this is I'd like to find a solution of the equations of motion in the bulk, and I'd like to evaluate the on-shell action for that solution. I want to substitute the solution back in. Okay, obviously these two terms are just going to vanish when I do that, right? Because they're just constraint terms. And so what's going to happen is that the on-shell action will just be this last term where B now corresponds to a bulk solution. So I'm talking about, to be specific here, I'm talking about the scalar field theory, and B was the source of phi dagger of x, phi of y, and this curly B is its extension into the bulk. So it's now, it's z dependent as well. Yeah, so if you trace this term back, there's a piece of it which is the Weyl anomaly. And then there's another piece that it actually comes because you have to not only do you have to pay attention to the fields in the path integral, but you have to track the, if you like, the cosmological constant, or you have the operator one in the effective action, and you have to track that as well. Okay, and what that term actually arises from the identity operator. Well, yeah, I mean, it all comes from that. That's right. Ultimately, that's where it comes from. You take two derivatives of B, phi dagger phi, and you get B. Yeah. Okay, so here's how you carry this procedure out. Okay, here's the RG equation. Okay, the beta function is just this quadratic function in this case. Okay, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to solve this iteratively. So I'm going to introduce a formal parameter alpha, which eventually I'll set to 1. Okay, and I'm just going to write B as a formal expansion. And if you substitute that into these equations and organize it power by power in alpha, you get an infinite set of equations, but they have a useful form. Okay, I can imagine solving the first one for B1, and then I know what the right-hand side of this is. I can solve that for B2. Now I know what the right-hand side of that is, so I can solve for B3, et cetera. Okay, so you can carry this out iteratively to all orders, as it turns out. And it's not hard to solve those equations. Remember, the zeroth, the first equation there is just saying that this B1 is covariantly constant. You can write a general solution in terms of what I'll call a boundary to bulk Wilson line of this W0. Okay, and the solution is determined in terms of a quantity that's just defined on the boundary. Okay, so we should think of this as the boundary source. And what these k's, these Wilson lines, are doing is you're just taking the source into the bulk and coming back out.
In principle, right, you don't have to even think about the bulk, right? The field theory knows about the seed, right? So
if you like. What do you mean? I don't have to think about the bulk? Of course I can do all of the, I'm going to calculate correlation functions for you. I can do these in the field theory, right? It's a free field theory, so they're just skeleton graphs and, okay. But the point is I'm giving you a holographic representation of that.
Yeah.
Okay. So you continue this, right? There's this iterative procedure at kth order. If you turn the crank, you find that there's a term in the on-shell action. Remember, I'm solving and substituting back into the on-shell action, okay? The kth term in the on-shell action, by kth order I mean it's kth order in the source, the boundary source B0, has this form where H is up to these multiplication by Wilson lines is this delta B, which is the, I guess I didn't write this, but it's the derivative of the cutoff function. Okay, so It's the delta B that knows about how you cut off, how you regulated the theory. Okay, and it turns out that this quantity is precisely a z derivative of a function which is related to the two-point function of the scalar fields in the field theory in a way I'll show you in a moment. Okay, so at kth order then you can draw a Witten diagram if you like, where you have k b zeros at the boundary, and the lines that I'm drawing here are just these Wilson lines. They come in, you attach this delta b factor, and you go back out. Okay, and the way it works is that you just have to sum over all permutations of positions. Okay, and it turns out that you can do the z-integrals. So this is what George wanted me to do. You can just do the z-integrals. They're trivial. You don't have to do any hard integrals. Basically, they're just, they end up being boundary terms. And when you do that, what you find is you just get 1 over k times something to the kth power. You can resum that, and of course that gives you a trace log. Okay, and so that trace log is what you knew that the partition function should be, right? The partition function is a determinant. Okay, so I did all this long song and dance, all this complicated geometry, but at least I got back to what I know is the right answer. Okay, so this sort of thing has been done in the Vasiliev case, but you know, Giambi and Yin famously did this, you know, took great pains to do this calculation, and here it's essentially trivial. Okay, so let me give you another example, and I'm almost done. Yeah. In the action, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a boundary term which is that I suppressed here, right? Because I, when I do the summation, I don't get dead of 1 minus bg, which is actually the partition function. So that, but it's yeah. So there's a boundary term which is essentially just the source times the bev. No, no, it's there. It's just I didn't write it. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Fudge factor. There's no fudge in it. You're making me hungry, though. Okay. Okay, so here's another example. Consider the consider a non-relativistic free field theory with dynamical exponent z equals 2. And all I'm going to say is that you can do exactly what I just did. You can use the same methods that I just used if you think about this theory from the light cone quantization point of view. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to think about the, I'm going to change the field theory metric to a metric of this form, and I'm going to consider the scale transformation as acting in this way. Okay, so this is z equals 2 because the time is transforming by the power, by the second power of the scale factor compared to the spatial directions. Okay, and this thing is equivalent, as in usually in DLCQ, this is equivalent to a non-relativistic theory because the vector field d by dc is turns out to be central in the algebra of the generators, and so you can go to a super selection sector where the phis, the fields, have a definite value of n. Right, and this corresponds to the non-relativistic mass. Okay, the setup is the same. As I said, you can go, you can turn the crank, and what you find is that the higher spin fields in the bulk can be thought of as having n equals 0. Okay, this is required in order that they be massless, in fact. And n is instead encoded in a choice of a flat connection. And the relevant flat connection that you should choose here is that is the one that corresponds to the Schrodinger spacetime. Okay, because the Schrodinger group is the group of symmetries of this fixed point. Okay, and finally let me finish with some comments about interactions. Okay, you can certainly consider turning on interactions on the field theory side. What precisely you get depends on the structure of those interactions. Okay, as long as I'm talking about a free fixed point, I can regard any such theory as a vector-like theory, right? I just put all the fields in a big vector. Okay, but when I turn on interactions, I determine how to think about the fields. Okay, so the simplest possibility is to continue thinking about this as a vector-like model. Okay, and what you should do if you want to turn on interactions, well, one way to turn on interactions is to turn on multi-trace interactions, okay, products of ON or UN invariant operators. But in order for the RG equations to be consistent, you have to include all such operators in general. Okay, so this is, so it goes from just having, you know, a couple of equations that you have to solve in the free case to an infinite set of equations that in principle there's no way to truncate. Okay, so what so I don't know all of the details of this story yet, but one way that, one example that you can apply this to is in the 2+1 dimensional field theory, where there's the supposed Klebanov-Polyakov duality, and you know that at large n, there's a large n critical point. And so you can try to find that physics here. And indeed, there's a, you can organize a solution of this infinite set of RG equations that correspond to the critical point. What you, in particular, what you have to do is you have to, there's a solution in which you specify the value of the four-point coupling on the boundary, okay? And then there's a solution that is determined in terms of those, in terms of that coupling. And essentially what, I think what's going to happen, I don't see all of the details yet, but what's going to happen here is that what I call B and pi will essentially interchange their roles. Okay, so in other words, on the boundary, what the solution will specify pi rather than B, as it did in the free case. Okay, and this will be the description of this interacting fixed point. And this is consistent with the Klebanov-Polyakov idea, where the two fixed points are obtained by doing a Legendre transform, right, or a canonical transformation in this language. Okay, so let me just finish with a comment, which probably means nothing, but you might find it amusing. Okay, so part of the lore of higher spin theory, this is horribly naive, but people say this, that you might think of obtaining a higher spin theory by considering a string theory and taking a tensionless limit, right? String theory on flat space has a tower of states with arbitrarily high spins at the mass level, and if you take the tensionless limit, these things naively all come down, and so you would get a bunch of massless higher spin theory, higher spin fields. Okay, so the remark is just, if I consider a Witten diagram, like I drew earlier, remember these lines that I'm drawing here are explicitly the these Wilson lines of the W0 connection. And suppose I, does that show up? Suppose I fill in between the lines. Okay. You might want to think about this as a string world sheet. Okay, it's not a string from the usual point of view here, right? Because I'm thinking of time as the RG direction. Okay, but if you think about that as a world sheet, the string would be tensionless, because as I said, the lines are Wilson lines of the connection W0, and W0 is flat, so it means that I can deform the curves any way I like, and I get the same answer. Okay, so that, in some sense, is consistent with what you might think of as a tensionless string, right? You can stretch it, and nothing happens. Okay, so I don't know if that, as I said, I don't know if that means anything, but if it does, it would be interesting. One idea is that when you turn on interactions, the tension becomes non-zero. I don't know if there's a picture like that or not. Okay, anyway, that's it. Thanks. Yes?
I do have a question. Very nice. You talked about the gauge code coming from the field of definition. In Brzezinski equation, there's another big gauge on ET, which is the choice of the cutoff function.
Yes.
And you haven't talked about that. So, do you know how changing the cutoff function somehow affect your gauge picture? And what is the space time?
It's essentially equivalent. I didn't emphasize this, but when I pass from the language where I just have a cutoff, as Polchinski had, to the language where I have an RG scale, okay? Instead of thinking of the cutoff function as a function of the cutoff now, I think of it as a function of the RG scale. In other words, the D'Alembertian that KF depends on involves a metric, right? And I put the scale into the metric. Okay, so essentially there's a KF is now a function of the renormalization scale. Okay, so in other words, I've moved it. It doesn't have support, or it doesn't change at the cutoff. It now changes at the renormalization scale.
But if you choose now KF to measure KF prime, what is the...
Okay, but the point is you remember when the COL2 transformation transforms Z.
Yeah.
Okay, and in general, that can be an arbitrary, it can transform in an arbitrary way in space-time. That's right. So it literally transforms the variable that KF depends on, but you know that effectively it moves the function around.
Can you, the ABS picture, does that amount to the way you slice somehow?
It's like changing the slice. So this is crucial for the, I claim that we have full diffeomorphism invariance in the ball.
So the scheme dependence.
The scheme dependence goes to that. That's right.
So what you're saying, cutoff functions or non-linear definitions are the same.
Yeah.
There might be some fine subtle mathematical.
Maybe I missed something, but seems like I have all of that. Did I answer all the other questions that were asked?
What's the connection between these equations and Basilev equation?
Good. I left that out of the talk because it's very technical, but I can say a couple of words. I think what's going on is that, so I have a group here, right? It has generators. In particular, there are the generators of the conformal group, O2, D. And if you're familiar with Vasiliev, he has these Grassmann Y and Z coordinates. And I think what those are is a specific implementation or a specific representation of the group theory structure. From the point of view of RG, there's no particular reason to choose that representation. Okay? In fact, I tried for a long time to show that, this is exactly Vasiliev, and I finally gave up. Decided they should come to me instead of me trying to go to them.
So could you then guess what is the deformation of your equations linked to the Hitchens Simons theories that the Malvi sector parameter theta, this angle? Would you know how to guess where to put this theta that Vasiliev has in your equation?
I'm not sure how many secrets I want to give away. Originally I was hoping from the field theory side, you're talking about the 1+1 case, are you? No.
Sorry.
2+1 boundary or bulk?
2+1
boundary. Trans-Simons. Oh, that Trans-Simons. Okay, I thought you were talking about Trans-Simons in the bulk. So a question that. That's right. That's right. So you can ask the same question that Jolma asked before. How do I gauge? Suppose I wanted to gauge the ON or UN. So one way to think about, what we have now. If I wanted to make the UN local, then whenever I write phi dagger of X, phi of Y, of course I should really have a Wilson line, an ON Wilson line in between, to make it covariant. And so you can interpret what we've done so far is we're just in a gauge where the connection is, where that ON connection is zero. And the coupling, the gauge coupling is turned off. So to gauge the theory, I'm not gonna just do it by Chern-Simons. I think to gauge the ON, you should reintroduce those Wilson lines, but you should also introduce additional terms that are phi independent, that are, that give rise to kinetic terms, et cetera, for the
instead of the argument carefully, because that would be a pain. An interacting theory would be very tough. Can you just see in your equation whether you have some freedom to deform them? Because your spectra is quite rigid. So can you see whether it's possible? Like in Vasiliev, I think, if I'm correct, you can only put this function f that depends on this theta in a very particular place. You cannot put it wherever you want because of the anti identity and whatnot. Right? So can you also guess?
In the present formulation, the ON is completely orthogonal to the to the OL2. And so it's just a spectator. So I don't see, I mean, other than going back and trying to turn on the gauge coupling as a, you know, think of the gauge coupling as an additional source in the boundary theory. I don't see how to do it, but you know, maybe there's a simple way. I should remark that the equations that we, the higher spin equations that we have are not obviously, they're sort of similar to Vasiliev, but on the other hand, they're very different in the sense that more or less, apart from some junk on the right-hand side, you know, his equations say that some curvature vanishes, right? And you saw the form of these equations. It's curvature equals beta function. Okay, so it's only if you're at a fixed point that the curvature vanishes. And so you know, you can play around trying to move the beta function onto the left-hand side, and you know, or you know, something like that. But it's, I've never been able to push it through.
The checks that you did, they hop to work because in a sense you never left the field theory, right? I mean, it's always just
in the
field theory, do some manipulation, write some action. But when you were comparing with Simon,
yeah, it was just a check that I didn't lose anything.
When you were comparing with Simon, it's a bit different because they did not have this derivative.
That's right.
For them, they had to check you.
That's
to
right.
Check that you did not miss.
It was a sanity check, right?
Yeah.
I didn't screw up.
Yeah.
There's nothing
what
inconsistent.
Would be interesting would do for this
I didn't lose anything.
Where you probably not have
sure.
That you
yeah. I mean, it's also not. If you want to turn on interactions, though, it becomes very non-trivial because
no, right,
you
right,
have
yeah.
to find
so,
solutions that correspond to a critical point.
Like solving the theory completely, which is but if this machinery works, it is bound to be
right,
because it will be drawn. Whatever it is, then you don't care if it is the same as people at the top. But if you could put this theta angle here,
you're saying without actually solving the theory, there should be something in the structure that tells you where to put the theta.
If the other prescription is roughly correct or more or less correct, as John said, it's not obvious because there are many observables that will not. But if it was more or less correct, you could try to put this f of theta in as similar as they did, and then compute then the z and see if it works or not.
But I think John is right. It's not completely obvious what the full holographic dual is. I mean, what?
Yeah. So you are kind of derivation, a way of deriving. So
yeah.
So you could answer this question.
Yeah.
Also, your approach seems to be kind of suitable for studying exactly Wilson loops. The kind of observable that Rama would like to understand
mm-hmm.
what's contained.
Mm-hmm.
After all, you are just studying some Wilson lines.
So, this field with Ignatian symmetry is also present in interesting theory as well.
It's surprising, it's what?
So, you can always redefine your fields even in interesting theories.
Oh, by nonlinear transformations?
Maybe.
Yeah, okay.
But even linear transformations, it maps nonlinear theory.
When you have interactions,
yes.
So but the same sort of logic will go through, right? What I will do, you know, in the interacting in the ON symmetric case, what I'm going to do is turn on all possible multi-trace operators. They all have sources which are multi-local, and those things are tensorial under the OL2 or UL2 symmetry. Okay, because they depend on a bunch of points in space-time, and each one of those essentially transforms. Okay, so the same sort of picture is still going to work, except that you now have an infinite number of sources, you have an infinite number of, you know, conjugate pairs in the bulk, and you have an infinite set of RG equations that describe their dynamics. Well, that's a good question. So the usual lore would be that in that particular model, right, what happens is that, you know, if n is very large, then, you know, as you know, the interacting fixed point is perturbatively close to the infrared, and so you to the ultraviolet, and you can study it in large n perturbation theory. So in this language, what you have to do is you have to look for a solution of the RG equations that corresponds to that fixed point. And I think I almost have it. It has to be that in the ultraviolet, you're turning on a coupling, like the four-point coupling. Okay, that's sort of a parameter that you have to turn on in the in the UV. And then you look for solutions for which there's a free source for one of the fields.
In the case, source is auxiliary.
Well, from the point of view of the free fix point, so you mean P? Yeah, from the point of view of the free fix point, P is just the Lagrange multiplier, and it's just determined. The information that I supply is the boundary in the free case. In the interacting large N theory, what I expect is that B and pi will interchange their roles. So the solution that I'm looking for is written in terms of a boundary value for pi rather than a boundary value for B. And as I said, I think I almost have that. The problem is that you have to redefine variables. And that's the hard part.